Hello, welcome to the Opening Bell, the Boxing News podcast. I'm editor Tris Dixon, joined, as always, I'm almost inclined to say, by Matt Christie. Matt, how's it going?
Yeah, good. Looking forward to the weekend.
Do you know what? I'm glad you said that. Sorry, let me interrupt. Yeah. I've been reading the iTunes comments about this, about this podcast. I've got to say, I haven't read them in a while, and there's some really nice ones there. A few people hating on the sound quality, particularly on the early days. Which is understandable, given we did it in a shower cubicle. But
fully clothed.
Yeah, that's of course. Maybe if we weren't fully clothed, it would have made all the difference with the sound. Anyway, there was a comment on there that said maybe one day you'll get excited about something. I think, and you definitely weren't in the shower that day. But in terms of getting excited about things, Bernard Hopkins is fighting Sergey Kovalev this weekend. Is that where you were coming from?
I was definitely going to talk about the Hopkins Kovalev fight. I'm generally a happy, excited fellow, certainly on the inside, but my voice doesn't do those emotions any favours. But anyway, yeah, Hopkins Kovalev. This is something special, isn't it? I think. I just hope that the fight can live up to it. And let's be honest, Hopkins fights very often disappoint. But I think the fact that we expect Hopkins to fight as he's going to fight should kind of appease any disappointment there. But this is all about, there's two things, isn't there? It's all about Bernard Hopkins' age, as it will be for as long as he fights, and it's about whether Kovalev can cope with his boxer tricks.
Okay, I've got a question for you. What's the best outcome for the sport on Saturday night? And you can't be ambiguous and just say a good foul-free fight. You know, it needs to be. What result is the best outcome for boxing on Saturday night?
I think the best outcome for boxing on Saturday night is for Bernard Hopkins to win, and to win fairly, and to win convincingly.
You think so, even at 49 years of age?
I think
so. You think Crusher wiping him out in two rounds, setting up a big fight with Stevenson?
I think there's two ways of looking at it. You asked me not to be ambiguous, but there are
No, I appreciate that.
But there are two ways to look at it. Yeah, you could say that Hopkins hasn't got that many more years left. Kovalev arguably has, and if he wins convincingly, we've got a new superstar there in the making, perhaps. But I just think boxing stories like this do boxing the world a good. This week on the website, and all over various media, I saw that we were celebrating George Foreman's victory over Michael Mora.
Age 45.
And okay, that may not have said a great deal about Michael Mora, or it may not give Michael Mora's place in history, might not do his place in history any favours. But the world of sport and the public at large were all of a sudden interested in boxing and this wonderful story. And every now and again, boxing does throw up stories like this, which I think makes the world look upon the sport favourably. However, if Sergey Kovalev comes out, makes an absolute mess of this 49-year-old man, to the untrained eye, people will be looking and going, what on earth is a 49-year-old man doing, being allowed anywhere near the ring and being hurt and being knocked out like that? That could be a far worse advertisement for the sport.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. There will be people who, if Sergey Kovalev does do that and takes Hopkins out in the first six rounds, will say he just took out a 49-year-old man, wasn't
it? Yeah. And it's not the case. I mean, this is a bit different to other kind of battle of the ages, in that people are often dragged out of retirement or they're given absolutely no hope whatsoever. Hopkins deserves this fight. He's got two of the three belts that are on offer on Saturday night. He's been operating at the top level in the light heavyweight division since he moved up, not 8 years ago now?
Yeah, it was about 2007 or so, wasn't it?
Yeah,
so,
yeah. He beat Tarver. Yeah.
So, okay, Kovalev, Hopkins. Kovalev is the favourite, 2-5 on. You can get the draw at 25-1, and Hopkins 12-5. Fair odds, aren't they?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
How do you see, tactically, how do you see Kovalev winning? Because he's not a busy fighter.
No.
He's obviously just a puncher, but is he one-dimensional? How does he beat Hopkins, who's more experienced and knows more tricks? And Kovalev, let me just point out, obviously for want of treading on the toes of my own previews, hasn't gone beyond eight rounds yet.
No, they're all good points.
If you, sorry, let me, I'll rephrase the question. If you're John David Jackson training Kovalev, what tactics do you give him?
I think he's got to be on the front foot and he's got to be busy. I think he's got to throw more punches than we're used to him throwing. At times in his fights, he can look one-dimensional, but he's not. He is a decorated amateur. He's done it from grassroots level up. People forget this sometimes. What Hopkins can do is he can just take the power out of the punches. He makes it all look so effortless the way that he does that, this very, very subtle little moves that he does. But the moment that Kovalev is boxing to Hopkins' pace, which isn't a quick one, then it's Hopkins' fight. Pretty much, you know, I can't remember seeing Hopkins take control of a fight and lose control of a fight, apart from early flash knockdowns, say against Joe Calzaghe, for example. But once he's in his groove, he's almost impossible to get out of it. Because then it starts to infiltrate into the brain, doesn't it, and everything else.
So say you're Nazim Richardson, what would you tell Hopkins on fight night?
I think he's just got to do what he does best. He's just got to do what he always does.
Make it messy, break it, break up any flow of the fight, keep interrupting the flow and keep moving. Obviously, don't go to the ropes.
Yeah, exactly. But I just think that Hopkins could be in for a surprise when he feels the force of a Sergei Kovalev shot. And I think that, to me, this is
Karo Murat was landing quite cleanly on Hopkins at times, wasn't he?
But he's not Kovalev, is he?
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, he's not. And we have seen Hopkins. Tavoris Cloud even was landing a few. Shumanov seemed to have no confidence in himself from the start. Whereas kind of, I thought Shumanov would make that a closer fight than it was. And I think we spoke last week, I just think as long as Kovalev hasn't got this Bernard Hopkins thing going round and round, this 49-year-old man, can't let this guy beat me, oh my God, he's really, really playing on my mind. If he just goes in there and does his stuff, I personally think he'll win.
I think Kovalev, what I like to see him do is be consistent behind the left hand and throw a lot of single jabs, but also a lot of double and triple jabs if possible, to try to keep Hopkins moving one way or another, to try and get the old legs moving. And also, something that Kovalev does do well is he works the body well. If he works Hopkins' body well, you could see Hopkins possibly even stopped. Certainly later on in the fight.
I don't think it's out of the question that Hopkins is stopped in this fight. But I do hope, kind of going back to what we were saying at the start of the show, is that I do hope he's not blown away for his own sake and everything else, and for his own legacy. I think it would be sad to see Hopkins kind of go out that way, and if he was to even take a pound in over 12 rounds and lose every round, and it's clear that Hopkins has got old overnight, I don't think that would be pretty either.
Hopkins has a 2.5-inch reach advantage, enough to make a difference on the night?
It could make a difference because it's Hopkins. Rather, Hopkins could make the difference. I'm not sure his 2.5-inch reach advantage will be the key to that difference. I would imagine that, just off the top of my head, I'm just trying to think of the guys that Kovalev has fought over the last 12 to 18 months, and I would imagine that they've all had a reach advantage over him.
If Hopkins loses, what does it do to his legacy? Even if he loses badly?
I wouldn't imagine it will affect it too badly, to be honest.
If he wins, how does it affect it?
If he wins, it's sensational. The thing is with Hopkins and with these sorts of fights, if Hopkins wins, he retires and Kovalev goes on to unify and dominate the light heavyweight division in his absence, then Hopkins' legacy gets stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger. If Kovalev disappears, or doesn't do a great deal, like Tavoris Cloud, like Jean Pascal, like
even Kostya Zou after Ricky Hatton, because no one knew what was left. They just assumed that he was shot because he didn't fight again.
Exactly. So, you know, but I think
not shot maybe, but obviously on the downside.
Hopkins for me is the he, out of all active fighters at the moment, he is the greatest active fighter.
That's serious fighting talk. Serious fighting talk. You've got Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao. Yeah. Roy Jones, you could say, is still active, but I think there's a guy whose accomplishments have been massively diminished by fighting on far too long. But you think Hopkins has had... So if you had one guy you could induct in the Hall of Fame out of Pacquiao, Mayweather, Hopkins, who gets your one vote?
Hopkins.
Fair enough. Okay. Interesting. I get that. I understand it. I'm not sure that I would go for that.
I think there's something that he said recently, which I've got a lot of admiration for, in that he's fighting Sergei Kovalev because he wants to be seen to fight the best. And he does seem to have made that happen.
Is that not a great soundbite, though? Is that not a typical Hopkins soundbite? Does he not see a weakness with Kovalev and think, I know I can beat that sucker? Does he not see something that's got his senses tingling that makes him excited for this fight? He thinks he is a one-trick pony. He's just got some power.
100%. Because he wouldn't have taken this fight, I don't think, if he didn't believe he could win. But I believe the only guy out there that he would not fight now is Andre Ward. Because
they're friends, though, isn't it?
Because he's beaten guys like this over and over again and beaten them handsomely, why wouldn't he think that he could beat Kovalev?
Yeah, interesting. I don't know. I mean, it's so hard to guess with Hopkins. I mean, I remember people predicting his downfall, not obviously just for Trinidad, where Trinidad was a future Hall of Famer and tearing through the middleweights, having won at welterweight and then got the WBA version of the middleweight title in that Don King tournament, but even against Winky Wright, it was a question of, one day Hopkins will be getting older. I think, what was that, 2006, 2007? And then he's gone on and on and on. And you can still ask that question, will he get old overnight? It's just so unpredictable, isn't it? It's so unpredictable.
It is. I mean, the one time where I genuinely thought he was going to lose and was Kelly Pavlik. I did think Kelly Pavlik would walk through him. And I think, as much as anything, I thought... It was what Freddie Roach said, because Freddie Roach had been in Hopkins' corner for the Joe Calzaghe fight, and Roach went on record afterwards as saying, right, Bernard, great career, hang him up, pal. And, you know, I kind of thought, well, he was right about Oscar De La Hoya.
He's right about Israel Vasquez.
Yeah, when he said things like that. So at that point, I thought, right, okay, Hopkins, you know, he probably should retire, and Pavlik will probably walk through him and make him retire. But since then... I mean, he's not getting better. That's not the case. But he's certainly been on. He's been on a similar level.
Yeah, I think the thing about what Freddie said is obviously Freddie knows the risks of carrying on too long. Mm. So I think he'd always ask someone to go less than to go longer.
Mm.
But I don't know. It's fascinatingly poised in Atlantic City. Wish I was there. Jack Hirsch should be there for us. He's the man lucky enough to be ringside for Boxing News. I just don't know. You know, I've obviously had to preview it. Absolutely torn. Perhaps as torn, if not more torn, for this than I was Froch Groves.
Mm.
Froch Groves, I came quite down, quite in favour of Froch quite heavily in the preview. I remember of the week, I'd sort of been leaning towards Groves and switched towards Froch for this one. I don't know, I kind of wrote the preview and thought I could almost just change the names.
And be
satisfied, because it's unpredictable what's going to happen. Because the thing is as well, Kovalev's fought at a decent level. He's bashed up some good guys, bashed up some better than average guys as well. But he's not fought an elite guy, and he's not gone beyond 8 rounds. And you hear these rumours that he's taken a pounding from Gennady Golovkin in sparring and at different times, and you just wonder if we know the whole story with Kovalev. I think regardless, if we do or we don't now, we will do by Saturday night. Interesting. Matt, I'm going to put you on the spot as well, not just for a Hopkins Kovalev prediction. In fact, I'm not even going to ask you for that. But there's a really interesting fight, another one that I've previewed this week, in Germany. And Felix Sturm is a slight underdog against Robert Stieglitz in a catchweight fight about 166.5 pounds. Sturm-Stieglitz, it's a really, really tough fight to pick, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. I'm just trying to think now what my first instinct would be. My first instinct was Robert Stieglitz, to be honest, just because of the size factor, and I think that Felix Sturm is showing more extensive signs of wear and tear than Sturm.
But Stieglitz has never had to come down to this weight.
That was my but. Didn't he start off light heavyweight?
He had a few when he sort of weighed 173.
And so for him to come down to once, even though it's only a pound and a half, at this stage of Stieglitz's career, that could be crucial.
Whose career?
Stieglitz. Yeah, I was quite excited then, wasn't I?
Yeah, damn you, critic. So, yeah, I think it's a really enthralling fight, I really do. It's the sort of fight that they should have in Germany more often, really. You think we wanted Sturm Abraham years and years ago when Abraham had the IBF belt and Sturm had the WBA belt. It wasn't going to happen for promotional reasons, although finances almost dictated in the end that it did. Unfortunately, it didn't. There's now a cruiserweight sort of conundrum where Juan Pablo Hernandez and Marco Huck, who's now a free agent, now not working with the Sauerlands, but they had both for a while. You know, that fight, it's got to be big business in Germany. It's, you know, two of the top guys fighting. It's frustrating that these fights don't happen more often, but the Sturm-Stieglitz one, kind of along the lines of what we were talking about last week, it's one of those ones where you can almost pluck 10 interesting questions about the fight out of thin air and say, is Sturm too old and has he got too much wear and tear? Is the weight going to affect Stieglitz? Is Stieglitz got too much wear and tear? You know, he had those three bruising fights with Arthur Abraham. So there's plenty, obviously it's Stuttgart where Sturm sort of made his home as well. Doesn't live there, but he's been popular, a big draw over there. Will that be a factor? So there's lots to take into consideration, but you're edging towards the betting favourite Stieglitz.
Yeah, edging. Okay. Edging, yeah, not running.
Fair enough. I think it will be a good fight, though. I really do. I think it will be an interesting fight. And then it sounds like we've squandered a page preview in this week's issue. Danny Flexen looked ahead to Bob Adjustafe, Travis Dickinson, and we've heard just before we came into the studio, in inverted commas, that Dickinson is out of the fight. So we have to see what happens there and whether that show still goes on. But obviously a lot of the attention this weekend is around Hopkins-Kovalev. It's one of those big ones where even if you're not, or if you haven't stayed up for a big fight in America for a while, you'll be keen to see this one live.
Yeah, definitely. I intend to stay up for this one. I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Interesting stuff. It's probably, I don't know. Yeah, great fight. Really interesting fight. And like you, really, I think I'd like a Hopkins win. Nothing against Kovalev, but you love those feel-good stories. They don't happen all the time in boxing. Mm. Anyone who's read that excellent new book, Road to Nowhere, will find out that there's a few hard luck stories out there. Still, Andre Fonfara last week stayed in the hunt for meaningful fights with the likes of the winner on Saturday and Adonis Stevenson by winning in Chicago. There was also a win by Tomoki Komeda against Alejandro Hernandez, sets up a fight with Jamie McDonald next year. Lots of interesting things going on. Another win for Wilfredo Vasquez Jr. Matt, what do you make of Vasquez Jr., someone you've seen and spent some time with in the past?
Nothing but praise for him as a fighter and a human being. Not, perhaps didn't do quite as well as he'd hoped in the ring. I know he's still going. I think ultimately
appears to have found his level, though, hasn't
it? I think ultimately his lack of amateur seasoning and everything. I know he comes from a fighting family, but he hadn't fought as an amateur. He turned professional, But yeah, he got exposed really against Jorge Arce. When for a little while it really looked like he might turn into a superstar. But he's a guy with good sense of humour, and he's just really seems to be very, very happy all the time. Just like me.
Let me just, just go reflect to Hopkins Kovalev. We have a pie chart, a reader's pie chart in the issue this week, saying who will win Hopkins Kovalev and how. What do you think are the two most popular outcomes?
It's got to be Hopkins points, Kovalev stoppage.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those, isn't it, where you know, something completely bizarre or the opposite might happen, but going into the fight, you kind of see those two possibilities.
Yeah. There's one though which I did find interesting, which in this week's Heroes and Villains, which I always enjoy partaking in and reading everybody else's opinions, everybody else in the team, and I won't be giving too much away, but Nick Bond, I believe, went for Kovalev via DQ, which I thought that was an interesting pick and a perfectly feasible one as well, conceivable one.
Like you, really, that caught my eye, and I was like, maybe, because obviously Hopkins being accused of being a dirty fighter before. People say that he looked for a way out in that second Chad Dawson fight. So, yeah, I mean, it's not the worst pick in the world. I'll try and get a price on that before we go off air. So to speak. I spoke to Nathan Cleverley this week ahead of his controversial fight with Tony Bellew. Controversial in the sense that it's on the Sky Box Office platform. That in itself has got people talking, not saying particularly nice things about Sky or Matchroom for putting it on Box Office. We've spoken before about the value in that bill and whether it should be or shouldn't be. I've obviously written columns about it before. Tony Bellew and Nathan Cleverley, they came head to head in the Ringside Studios last week. Did you see that, Matt?
I still haven't, to be honest with you. I still haven't seen it.
It didn't have the sort of Frotch Groves electricity, and nor did it sort of have the Groves De Gale animosity. But there's something there that clearly, you know, they rub each other up the wrong way. But again, Nathan Cleverley has spoken to this week. He talks about the future, and he says he's trying to insist that he is hungry and that he is ready for Tony Bellew and to progress his career, because the knock on Nathan Cleverley has been that he's lost his hunger and desire in the sport. What's your take on that, and what do you make of what Nathan's saying?
It's an interesting read, actually, and I don't know, there's something, you know, I'll maybe prove wrong, but there's something that doesn't quite ring true for me with Cleverley's so-called determination here. I'm not sure how much, probably not physically. I think physically he'll get over that pounding that Kovalev gave him. But mentally, I think that may have taken a lot of the desire away from Cleverley. Still not convinced that cruiserweight is the right weight division for him. It seemed like, and you know, it's easy for me to say, but the easy option for him was to kind of carry on, but do it at cruiserweight. Whereas Bellew certainly, probably from in his early days as a professional, light heavyweight was not an easy task for him to get to. Bellew seems really enthused by his hatred for Cleverley, and that seems genuine. But as for Cleverley, to me, there's something not quite ringing true with his words there.
Okay, interesting. I mean, obviously, it's one of those we'll find out on fight night.
Yeah, absolutely.
No question, I think, from Bellew Cleverley, it's going to be one of those fights where I don't think either of them will fall over early, so we'll find out what's really inside them then.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, and it may get to the actual fight itself, and, you know, the desire may return for Nathan Cleverley. I don't want to say. I won't say anymore. Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens on fight night.
Also in the magazine this week, really nice picture of Ricky Hatton reunited with his old rival Kostyuzu for the first time since their fight in the what was the MEN Arena back in 2005. And Danny Flexen spoken to Lee Noble, who very sadly has been diagnosed with leukemia. Interesting stuff from there, and very, very sad too. It's sobering when you read of this sort of stuff. Wish Lee all the very best moving forward. With regards to the issue, we went to a press conference on Monday, didn't we? Not much happened, did it?
Oh, yeah, of course.
And the Eubanks senior and junior were a no-show. Basically, they'd agreed to come as late as the Friday night, and over the weekend, Frank Warren had a text from Chris Eubanks senior asking for £50,000 to be put in escrow, or else they wouldn't go, because Billy Joe Saunders had apparently said on a video that he would slap Chris Eubanks Jr. when he saw him next. So it all got a little bit heated there on Monday, and no one really got what they wanted out of it, apart from possibly the Eubanks?
Yeah, more than likely. Yeah. I would say they got exactly what they wanted.
What did they get?
It got a lot of attention for not being there, didn't they? I think... I know kind of people were saying that, you know, we're here to interview. Oddly, by Eubank not being there, I think they created more of a story around that press conference. Whether that was the aim, whether it was mind games, whether it was just trying to, put Billy Joe ill at ease or make him think twice about the threat that's coming his way, or, you know, that was not the right stage for it, I don't know. But certainly by Eubank not being there, that was the story, and in the end, it was quite a big story.
What did you make of it? Did you find it disrespectful? Were you not surprised? Were you outraged?
I wasn't outraged and I wasn't surprised, but I certainly think that it's disrespectful. Because, I mean, as Billy Joe Saunders himself said at the press conference, is that, you know, there's journalists there, and this is absolutely so far from a woe is me tale. I realise that. Yeah, the people that work within the industry are privileged and lucky to do so. However, but there's freelance journalists there who have taken a day out of their schedule to go and to get an interview. Perhaps they've been told by the editor, right, go and get Eubank, or they've got to go and do that off their own bat. And Eubank isn't there. It's not just Billy Joe Saunders he's pissing off. Pardon my language. There's a wider thing there going on.
Okay, interesting. How big is that fight? Do you think by the time that fight actually happens, it's going to be bigger than Fury-Chisora?
I still think that Tyson Fury and Derek Chisora are the two biggest names on that bill.
Okay.
I think you'll find that the boxing fan, the boxing purist, the boxing fan, will probably be more intrigued by the Saunders-Eubank fight, but I still think that in terms of your casual floating boxing fan or your general sports fan, they're going to be more interested in Tyson Fury and Chisora.
Okay. Right. Also this week, Donald McRae has been out to Philadelphia to speak to Bernard Hopkins in a major exclusive for us. And Danny Flexen has been speaking to Nonito Donaire, who's talking about his recent defeat to Nicholas Walters. Some really interesting stuff in those two big interviews, well worth a read. And we've also taken delivery of the Boxer News Annual 2015. This is always a labour of love for the team. We produce it each year around this time before Christmas. It's the perfect stocking filler, and it's available from our Boxing News Online shop now via the website, and I believe it's on the newsstands from the 23rd of November. Inside, Matt's looked at the future and what it might hold for Floyd Mayweather. I've reflected upon the night that was Froch Groves 2, speaking to Adam Smith at Sky Sports, Eddie Hearn, and Anthony Lever at Matchroom, as well as a few other personalities along the way. We've got an exclusive interview with Miguel Cotto. There's lots in here. John Dennen ghosted Anthony Joshua for a week ahead of his fight with Denis Baktov. He's also done a really interesting piece on Cuban fighters and why they haven't been hitting the highest heights in the professionals when they have in the amateurs over the years. So there's lots of different stuff. We also have a centerpiece of this issue or the annual, and it's looking at boxing icons from around the world. And we've looked at nationalities where they've produced boxing heroes over the years. And we've got some wonderful rare archive pictures that we've managed to use from the Boxing News archives. Some great shots there of stuff that we haven't been able to publish before because we haven't had the right magazine for it. And there's new shots of Jack Dempsey, stuff of Jack Johnson, De La Hoya, Tyson, Lomachenko, Ingemar Johansson, Jim Watt, Wilfredo Gomez. I could go on and on, but it's a complete treasure trove of pictures. Matt, what's your highlight of the annual?
I don't know. This is the first time I've seen it all put together, to be honest with you. When did it come in? Yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday afternoon.
I don't know. I haven't read all of the features, but I will say that I was impressed with the Anthony Joshua feature from John. But there's so much stuff in here. There's so much stuff, and I'm sorry, I'm kind of half scanning through it as I'm chatting. I'll stop doing that. It's a bit rude.
It is actually, yeah. I think you've offended me and the two listeners. Okay, let's change tax a little bit. I'm obviously heading out to Las Vegas for the Amir Khan Devin Alexander fight. It's a good show. There's a return of Victor Ortiz. Abner Mares is on the bill. Keith Thurman is going to be fighting Leonard Bundu, which was an interesting
good fight.
I
like that.
If Bundu wasn't so old, I think people would hold him in much higher regard than they do. I think people see his age and think he's going to get knocked off sooner rather than later. But yeah, so that's on that bill. And there's also Jermell Charlo against Demetrius Andrade. Andrade, we know, is not Mr. Excitement, but he is a good boxer. Nice to watch. And on the same night, over the road, is Timothy Bradley against Diego Chavez on a bill that also features Matt Korobov against Andy Lee. So Matt, pick one fight on that night that you could watch. One fight, not one bill.
Probably Amir Khan.
Khan Devin Alexander?
Probably Khan Alexander. The reason I hesitate, I mean for me, Amir Khan, love him or loathe him, he very rarely is anything in anything other than a very exciting contest. Devin Alexander, however, may find a way to buck that trend.
He's been in some dull fights, hasn't he, Devin Alexander?
Yeah, he really has, yeah. Probably Amir Khan with Thurman Bundu. In fact, I'm changing it. I want Thurman Bundu. I want to watch that.
Really?
Yeah.
So you'd have those two definitely above Lee Korobov and Bradley Chavez?
Bradley Chavez, I don't think you're going to see Bradley in another Fight of the Year contender for a while. I believe that. And Lee Korobov, admittedly, has got a lot of intrigue. That would be in the top three as well.
Interesting.
But Thurman Bundu, I think, has got the ingredients to be a surprise little firecracker.
Okay, interesting. I do think the gap in class between Thurman and Bundu will be too high, too great on the night. But Thurman's one of those, again, it's not who he's beating, it's how he's beating them. So it will be interesting to see what he can do against Bundu. My gut feeling is that he could do a number on Bundu.
Really, really. That'd be interesting. I'm not completely sold on Keith Thurman as yet.
Okay, interesting. I'm not sold on Thurman. I should add to the extent where I think he's the next guy to fight Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, obviously we get we're privy to a lot of thoughts and feelings in the boxing world and from readers. And there are some real Thurman supporters out there who think that he is the guy that most deserves a shot on Mayweather, and I disagree with that. I'm not saying that he couldn't beat Mayweather in a year or 18 months' time, But I think it's too early for him at this stage. And I don't think he's done anything to merit the shot just yet.
Yeah, fair comments.
So, guys, I think that's going to be us done for this week. Next week, when we reconvene, will history have been made? More history have been made? Or will we be looking at a new era of the light heavyweights and praying that Sergey Kovalev and Adonis Stevenson will get it on still? All to play for this weekend with Hopkins Kovalev. Very much looking forward to dissecting the fight for you guys next week. In the meantime, like I said, look online for the Boxing News Annual at www.boxingnewsonline.net and pick up this week's issue, if for no other reason than the brilliant cover line that's beneath the Box Nation cover wrap. See what we've called Hopkins Kovalev. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. Guys, thanks for joining us this week, and we'll be back after Hopkins and Kovalev next week.